This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode number 46, An Unexpected Journey. Recorded September 14th, 2016.
Hey guys, what's going on? Builder said to hit you guys back up. Welcome to another edition of the Gridiron Graduates. I am, of course, as always, joined by my good buddy, Mr. Ian Wharton. What is going on down there in Houston, my friend?
Hey, man. Things are good. Just wrapping up that first week of football, which really excited about tomorrow. It's Thursday, so we're recording this Wednesday night. So, Thursday is when Bleacher Report's NFL 1000, our first week, debuts. And so crammed through all the AFC games Sunday through Tuesday. And feeling pretty good, man. Just excited that the new season's here. Pretty much went as I expected as far as my team with the loss in Seattle. But no, things are good.
Yeah, but they held in there for a while. They had the lead till late, but
They should have won. They should have won. But hey, that's been the Dolphins' last decade plus. So. Lead until the last moment, and then the defense lets them down. So, but hey, that's all right.
But yeah, definitely, like you said, crazy week one, fun week one. Glad to have the season back. So we'll kind of run through a couple of the games, touch on some interesting stuff, talk about some of the week two games, and then we'll touch on some of the college games this week because it's definitely going to be a fun week three. You got a lot of good games on tap. I mean, week two was definitely hectic in college. We'll have to touch on some of that. So definitely a lot to get to. So let's jump into it. We'll start with the season opener, the game that kicked everything off, and it wound up being a pretty darn good one. The Broncos, behind Trevor Siemian, beat the Panthers after erasing a 10-point second-half deficit. Broncos win at 21-20. Tell you what, I was pleasantly surprised with the way Trevor Siemian played. I did tweet after the game, or after I got to watch the replay, that to me it seemed like a lot of the offense was very simple. You know, a lot of short passes, as far as like the passing offense goes. A lot of short passes, a lot of screens, and then as a whole on offense, definitely focused on the run. But, you know, with a running back like C.J. Anderson, and this is kind of Gary Kubiak's bread and butter, is to use the running game. This is probably what we could expect from the Broncos, and, you know, if C.J. Anderson can get back to his old ways, I think the offense should be okay. Siemian just needs to do what he needs to do, and he looked pretty comfortable behind the pocket. You know, he did okay. Like I said, didn't take too many shots downfield, it seemed. You know, a lot of easy stuff, but sometimes with a young quarterback like that, it's okay to do that when you have a trustworthy back like C.J. Anderson. And obviously the defense did their thing. You know, Von Miller didn't step up until late in the game. He was pretty quiet, but eventually got into it, and they definitely smothered Cam Newton, to say the least. But yeah, very good week one win for the Broncos.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was a little bit surprised. Siemian, I didn't think he played great. I mean, like you mentioned, though, he did have a couple of those plays where he felt the pressure closing in, and he was able to escape and extend the plays, even scramble and get a couple of good gains there. So that's actually pretty encouraging. As far as his ability to start long term, I don't really know if he's got that potential. Just a very limited arm. He did rifle a couple passes in there. Like, he throws a good ball. He just lacks velocity and general arm strength. But he does throw a tight spiral. And so, you know, those things are possible. We kind of saw that with Jared Goff, too. Jared Goff has a good arm, but he's not the strongest arm in the NFL. But he throws a good ball, too. And so I think he actually has a stronger arm than Siemian does. But, you know, there are some things that Siemian, I think, can build on. I don't think he's going to be the long-term starter there. We all know Paxton Lynch is going to be a guy that takes eventually. I'm more of the type to say most situations get the young guy out there early. Simeon's young too. I mean, obviously it's only his second year, his first game really played. So it's going to be interesting to see how long they stick with Simeon, just because I think if you look at the upside of his play, I don't think he really has much of an upside as far as getting too much better. At the very best, maybe you're looking at like a Fitzpatrick-type quarterback. I don't think that's really a positive when you're a Super Bowl contender. So, but they did pull this game out. The defense wasn't quite as dominant as we saw last year. Carolina, quite frankly, I'm a little bit surprised. Their offense looked pretty good, but they weren't able to capitalize on a couple opportunities that they created. It was a really good start to the football season, though. That was a fun game. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Carolina progresses throughout the season, because Calvin Benjamin had a great first half. Jonathan Stewart looked really good, looked healthy. And how they continue to progress throughout the season as they incorporate their young wide receivers. Can Benjamin be a constant and consistent threat every single week? He disappeared really in the second half as the Broncos kind of changed up their coverage strategies as well. So those are some things to watch, I think, moving forward. But very impressed, though, actually with both teams. Even though Carolina lost, I was actually impressed with them on offense specifically. Defensively, they didn't quite have as much juice as we saw last year either. So offense is a little bit ahead of the defense in the opening game, which is a little more of a rare occurrence, but it was refreshing.
Yeah, definitely. So, you'll see how these teams bounce back next week. Panthers get the 49ers. Broncos get the Colts. So, it should be interesting there. Run through some of the other scores. Buccaneers beat the Falcons 31-24. Ravens over the Bills 13-7. Texans beat the Bears 23-14. Like we expected, the Jaguars hung in there. It was pretty close, but unfortunately they come up short to the Pack, 27-23. Chiefs with a big comeback, down 21 points. They come back and beat the Chargers in overtime, 33-27. And I guess we'll kind of touch on this quick too, because of course the big news out of this game is that Keenan Allen, torn ACL, out for the season. Brutal news. You know, poor guy now is starting to build a history of injuries. And, you know, this was just one of the factors that led to the Chargers going 4-12 last season. And this was after, you know, Keenan Allen, I think, only missed 8 games last year. He at least played half the season. Now he's 1-done. So, you know, really unfortunate there for the Chargers.
Yeah, definitely a tough break, especially after he had just signed that contract extension as well. He gets $20 million guaranteed. But, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad deal for the Chargers. They got him kind of at a below-market deal, considering his talent level. I mean, he was really having a good game up until the injury. Then it was a non-contact injury. You know, whatever it is with this guy, and it's not just him. For some reason, his body is just struggling to withstand the rigors of the NFL and what the NFL requires your body to train at that level, to move at that particular level. It's very stressful on the body, and I don't think there's really anything. I wouldn't say he's injury prone, because I kind of think that that's a little bit, almost a little bit blaming the athlete, whereas it's clearly not his fault. He's not making the choice to be injured. Mm-hmm. It could be overtraining as well, what's causing this. It could be genetics. So there's a lot that really plays into it. So, you know, I'm disappointed in this, just because he's a playmaker, along with Teddy Bridgewater, you know, already seeing him hurt. You know, and I'm sure we'll touch on Robert Griffin next, but you know, Robert Griffin too, also with a major injury. And these are guys that are just really fun to play, whether you like them or not, whether you're fans of them or not. They bring excitement to the game, and just really unfortunate, especially for the Chargers. I know that you were really high on them entering the year. This was why I was concerned with them going back a couple episodes. I agree with you though that they have a lot of talent, but they've got to keep that talent on the field. One positive from that game, though, that I saw from San Diego, Melvin Gordon looked better, looked a little bit more decisive, looked willing to play physical. That's a major positive. Got a couple touchdowns. That's a huge bonus for sure, especially from his dreadful rookie year. So, you know, taking that into consideration, it's unfortunate how they lost, especially to get such an early big lead and then to let the Chiefs just storm back into it with a lot of dump-off passes to Spencer Ware. Good win for the Chiefs, for sure. But as far as for the Chargers, that's a rough one. That's a tough loss. The Chargers lost that game in the second half in the trenches. And, you know, as so often, that's where these games get decided, is in the trenches. And that was, I think, the deciding factor here as well.
Mm-hmm. You brought up RG3. Let's go ahead and talk about that game, too, because definitely some stories coming out of that one. Eagles beat the Browns 29-10. Carson Wentz, not too bad for his regular season debut. But again, it feels like, same with Simeon and the Broncos, a lot of this game is predicated on the run. And you definitely saw the Eagles mix in pretty much all their running backs. Ryan Matthews got the bulk of the work, but Darren Sproles was mixed in there a bit. Kenyon Barner got a few carries. And then Wendell Smallwood was the kick returner. So it was nice to see all the running backs get some action. But overall, Carson Wentz, you know, I mean, granted, yes, it was the Browns, not exactly the most elite of defenses he's facing. But, you know, a win's a win. And, you know, so not a bad start. But, yeah, you mentioned RG3. Definitely sucks to see him go down. You know, it seemed like he was starting to pick things up a little bit. And now we'll see what happens. Now they got to roll with Josh McCown. And could be another long year for the Browns.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned it with Robert Griffin. He, you know, almost knew it right away that, yeah, I tweeted right after it happened. I was like, ooh, that looked like that was a painful injury. Just got popped in it, and it wasn't a malicious hit. He should have avoided it. Jalen Mills would, you know, basically smacked him pretty good, but, I mean, you know, nothing dirty about it. There's, you know, Jalen Mills had a heck of a game, by the way, for Philadelphia, which I was a big fan of him coming out of college as well. Fell kind of for some other off-the-field reasons. Big game from him, so that's encouraging. But yeah, that was really tough, really unfortunate, disappointed to see that happen from Robert Griffin's perspective. As far as looking at Carson Wentz, I thought he played all right. I thought he had a good rookie debut. And then as you continue to take in more of the context, you know, didn't really play in the preseason. Considering he came from North Dakota State, it looks even better and better. And I took some flack on Twitter because I had tweeted out that I thought he played all right. You know, he didn't implode. He didn't blow up and play poorly like many rookies do. And, you know, and some people, I think, took exception to that. Said, oh, you know, what are you talking about? He didn't just play okay. He played amazingly. Like, that was a fantastic debut. You know, look, and I told people, it's like, you know, I didn't love Wentz coming out. He played better than what I expected. But at the end of the day, too, like you mentioned, this was the Browns defense. This is inarguably the worst defense in the NFL. Like, literally, they probably have three or four guys who should be starting on a regular good defense. So now that has to be considered when we're looking at an evaluation. Now you play who's on your schedule, and you know we talk about that with college. There's nothing you can do about that as a player. But I do think that it's important to keep that in mind, too, is that he was not being challenged. There was no film on him. One advantage that he actually had was that there was no real film on him for the Browns to study. So, you know, if he plays like this come middle of October and November, when there's already 4 to 6 weeks of film on him, and he's still avoiding mistakes. Now, he did get lucky. There was a couple fumbles that hit the ground. He ended up getting them back, so no big deal on that. But, you know, that's stuff that can come back and haunt you later. So he had three excellent throws. Two of them went for the touchdowns. The third was a dig pattern. I think it was on like a third down as well where he rifled it in there. There were some negatives that happened on that play as well. He stared down the target. He was not moving his feet very well throughout the game. So there were some things that, you know, and it's really about process. For me, it's about process more than it is about just simply about the stat line. Now, he did avoid passing mistakes, and that's great. Like I mentioned, he did have those standout throws. So overall, I thought it was a good performance. I'd say it's like a B performance. He didn't look like Robert Griffin a couple years ago. He didn't look like Andrew Luck. He didn't look like, you know, one of these phenoms, but he had a good outing. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm definitely excited to look moving forward and seeing now, okay, well now what happens? And, you know, so overall, impressive debut from him. Definitely things to build on. What I'm most encouraged about is that Doug Peterson, the head coach, thoroughly outcoached Hugh Jackson and the Browns. The Browns looked all out of sorts. Now, they don't have the talent to constantly compete, but quite frankly, from Hugh Jackson, that was extremely, extremely bad of his first week. Doug Peterson had a great plan for Carson Wentz, kept the balance. They got cold there in like the middle of the game, and then they went back to the running game, and then Wentz hit a couple of those throws, and it just busted the game open. So just an impressive performance from them. I think that Wentz and Peterson's going to be a really good pairing. I think they'll be able to maximize Wentz. Now, I personally think that Wentz has an average ceiling, and we'll see. I could be totally wrong. Maybe I proved to be right. Maybe I proved to be wrong in either direction. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see that over the next 5 to 10 years, probably. If he's an average quarterback, you know, they'll stick with him for a long time. So we've seen that, and obviously the Eagles have seen that in the past as well. So good performance from them. The Browns, really concerning, man, with Griffin out. I don't think we'll see him again this season. By the time he's eligible to return, I think Josh McCown will either be hurt, and Cody Kessler will have been playing. And if that happens, then the Browns will probably continue to lose at a high rate because Kessler is quite bad. So, and McCown's not any better than Griffin. So bad news for the Browns fans for sure. And good, though. Good for the Eagles. Good start to the season for the Eagles. Definitely saw a lot of positives there.
Mm-hmm. And Monday night showdown next week against the Bears. So that should be interesting. And I will say, too, it was nice to see Nelson Agholor get involved a little bit as well. Him catching a touchdown on a deep pass. So is he finally turning the corner? We'll see.
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan of Nelson Agholor. I think that he's going to be fine. It's just going to take time for these young guys.
Yeah.
And it always does. Very rarely do you see those guys come out right out of the gate and have just blow your mind seasons and performances. You know, it's great if they can, but, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen right away. And, but yeah, I definitely saw some encouraging things as well from Agholor in that game.
Another one of the more exciting games from week one. And, you had mentioned you're covering the AFC game, AFC team. So you definitely had an eye on this one. The shootout that was the Raiders at the Saints, and on a gutsy 2-point conversion, Oakland beats New Orleans 35-34, despite 423 yards passing from Drew Brees. But, you know, Derek Carr, 319, and Jalen Richard, 75-yard touchdown run on his first career carry. So definitely a lot of young talent, and then just, you know, great games as well from Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. But if you had any Saints on your fantasy team, Congratulations. Willie Snead, 172 yards and a touchdown. Brandon Cooks, 143, two touchdowns. One of them went for 98 yards. Whew. Boy, oh boy. What a fun game that was, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, well, although if you had C.J. Spiller, you are not happy.
Yeah.
he got released.
I mean, if you're relying on C.J. Spiller right now, though, then you probably drafted pretty terribly, or you're in an extremely deep league.
That's true. I actually did take him in, like, the last round of one of my leagues, just as a pure flyer, because I was like, hey,
I mean, worst comes worst, I cut him. Yeah, I mean, I considered Spiller at times, too, in some of my drafts, so I can't fault you too much. You know, yeah, it's... It's tough to see what it's come to from him, but go ahead, bud.
Sorry. But yeah, yeah. No, you're good. But yeah, that was a thrilling game. Really impressed with the Oakland Raiders. You know, not only to make that two-point conversion, but just like the balls to do it. I mean, my goodness. You don't see those types of decisions often. And that's one that, you know, come later in the season had they not gotten... If they missed the playoffs by that one game, you better believe it would have been a much rougher outcry than what they'll receive now. Obviously, there's nothing but praise for them now. But you know, they ended up benching Sean Smith in the fourth quarter. I thought that was a huge mistake. He had a rough game, but ultimately, it's a tough matchup for him. It's a tough matchup to put a 6'3 cornerback on a 5'10 cornerback with 4'3 speed. And, you know, you put him in there one-on-one with, you know, one deep safety, you can't be surprised that the guy's going to get beat then. So I was disappointed in that. Their secondary pretty much fell apart as soon as that happened. DJ Hayden had a horrible game. Amerson, just really nondescript game. He played in off coverage the entire game, which is really just it reflects his talent. He's not going to do anything really special for them. So they've got some cornerback issues. I thought it was way, way harsh. Now, I understand trying to send a message that he's got to play better, and he does have to play better, for sure. But, no, this was a really entertaining game, though. Tough one for the Saints to lose that. Really tough for them to lose that. But as a fan, purely entertaining.
Some other scores. Bengals beat the Jets 23-22. Definitely have to be impressed with Andy Dalton. Gets sacked 7 times, still throws for over 300 yards, and still leads the Bengals to a win. So, you know, it's week one, but definitely a big win because you know both these teams are going to be in playoff contention. You know, especially if these two are battling for a wild card spot, this win's going to come in handy. Titans lead for a while, but then the Vikings come back and win 25-16 behind Sean Hill, although it was really a couple of defensive touchdowns that made all the difference here. As we mentioned at the top of the show, Seahawks score late, beat the Dolphins 12-10. Giants, 20-19 win over the Cowboys. Dak Prescott throwing 45 times. I don't think they planned to do that. And I think a bigger problem is that not only did he throw 45 times, but only, what, 5 or 6 of them went to Dez Bryant. That's not good. If you're going to throw that many times, you got to try to get it to Dez at least a few more times. But also, if you're the Cowboys... You can't always settle for field goals. You got to be able to finish these drives, and that was also one of the big differences. You know, that led to them losing. And I think the funny thing about this game, though, too, was how everyone was touting the Giants as, or everyone touted Washington as division champs. After this game, and then Washington goes and lays an egg against Pittsburgh. So. You know, that's the nature of the NFC East anymore, I guess.
Yep. Very inconsistent, very up and down. It's hard to predict on a weekly basis. And, you know, you mentioned Prescott. Offensively, the the Cowboys have to be more aggressive. You know, he's not a good deep ball thrower, and that's easily his biggest weakness. It was his big weakness coming out of college. He's only okay as an intermediate thrower, and we kind of saw that as well throughout this game. But Jason Garrett and his staff have to sometimes force balls to Dez Bryant and just say, look, man, just throw it up. Just go let him throw three passes a game downfield to him if he's in single coverage, and maybe even one double coverage. Just, you know, you don't want your quarterbacks consistently doing that, but in that situation where you have such a dominant player and the defense is just loading up on Ezekiel Elliott, you know, as Elliott didn't have a great game, he didn't look bad at all. He looked pretty good. He created the most that he could on those runs, especially that touchdown run was really good. But, you know, they're stacking the box against these guys because, you know, there's no threat to go downfield. So you've got to sometimes just force the ball to these super elite alpha wide receivers. And, you know, this was an issue last year, though, too, even without Dez Bryant. Just too reliant on guys like Cole Beasley and Jason Witten. Those are complementary players. Those are not guys that you can build your offense around. So I would like to see them be a little bit more vertical, be a little less predictable on offense as well. You've got to be aggressive. Their defense is not good enough to sit there and try to just play ball control like the Seahawks can. You know, you've got to be aggressive, and it's sink or swim for Dak Prescott, and that's not really fair. It's not what he was brought in to do, but that's unfortunately the job he has to do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not a good performance from him, I didn't think, in his debut, and not that that should be held against him. I mean, he's a fourth-round rookie. Now, I thought he deserved to go higher than that, but that is what it is. So, you know, they've got to retool a little bit as they enter week two.
Lions win a shootout over the Colts 39-35. Steelers beat the Redskins 38-16. And the Los Angeles Rams, thanks for showing up. And if you pull a performance on Sunday like you did against the 49ers, you might get run right out of Los Angeles as quickly as you showed up, losing to the Niners 28-0. But let's talk.
This is an embarrassing performance. Yeah, it's really an embarrassing performance from them. I mean, I'm almost glad that they're not playing Jared Goff because, I mean, it's come out that apparently he's struggling with the playbook. I'm guessing that he's really what the Rams are doing is that they're using big words and big play calls for basically what is a high school level offense.
Yeah.
Came out also that the 49ers with Jim O'Neill as the defensive coordinator, who did not do a good job for the Browns at all and was really one of the fourth or fifth options for Chip Kelly as a defensive coordinator, they apparently knew what the offensive plays were going to be based off the alignment. And I tell you what, if a bad defensive coordinator notices that, it's going to be a long season. This is a really toxic situation for Jared Goff and for Todd Gurley. I feel bad for those two. I actually don't think that Goff, now I think Goff should play based off of talent. I hope he doesn't play all season, just out of principle, because honestly, Fisher needs to be fired. That staff needs to be cleared out. They need to retool that offense. The skill players outside of Gurley are just awful. The offensive line is bad. The scheme is terrible. I feel bad for Goff. I mean, the people are piling on Goff on social media, and that's fine. I mean, that's confirmation bias, but you know, don't count him out and don't count Gurley out yet, but we need to see those guys with a real coaching staff, a staff that actually gets it offensively. You know, I don't know who's going to be available this time next year or obviously after the season when it's going to be time to hire a new coach. But, I tell you what, Jeff Fisher, as long as he's there, it's going to be hard for any rookie quarterback or young quarterback to succeed.
And then the Sunday night game came down to a missed field goal off a botched snap. But it was a pretty interesting game throughout. Patriots behind Jimmy Garoppolo beat the Cardinals 23-21. you know, obviously a good win for the Patriots, you know, without Tom Brady, without Rob Gronkowski. You know, this was really all about Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan. They seem to be two of the stars of the show. And, you know, tough loss for the Cardinals. You know, you have the Patriots at home. They're minus two of their biggest weapons. It feels like a missed opportunity, really, for the Cardinals, you know, in this division, you know, trying to battle with Seattle. So, you know, tough break for them. But they played well. You know, Carson Palmer played pretty good. Larry Fitzgerald does what he does. David Johnson was just outstanding, and he's clearly the head honcho now in that running game because Andre Ellington and Chris Johnson only had about, what, 6 to 8 snaps, something like that, between the two of them. It was all David Johnson. He's definitely, you know, early on, he's kind of living up to the hype, or the preseason hype, especially in fantasy, so, you know. But, yeah, like I said, tough one for the Cardinals.
Yeah, that's definitely not how you want to lose a game, especially in such a winnable opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like this was maybe a situation where they just took them lightly, and the Patriots came out, executed well, even though they were missing, you know, so many studs. And, you know, this is a team without Chandler Jones. Obviously, he's in Arizona now. Chandler Jones isn't there. Tom Brady, obviously, Rob Gronkowski, obviously out. Offensive line injuries. Just incredible that Arizona didn't win this. And you know, it doesn't always come down to the quarterback. But, you know, this is a game where Carson Palmer didn't play great. And they missed some opportunities, especially, I think, in the second half, to close this one out. And obviously, it came down to a missed field goal, so they should have won it probably. But, you know, it really probably shouldn't even have been that close. So, you know, I'm looking at this game and the result, and I'm saying, Arizona, man, what happened? It's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. But that's really an unexcusable loss. At the end of the season, you're going to come back to that one, and you're not going to be happy about that at all. I was impressed with the Patriots, obviously. I mean, what else are you going to say? I mean, it's the Patriots. You know that they're always going to be coached well. They're always going to be in position. And, you know, so that's just one of those things where, as the Cardinals, if you're a Super Bowl contender, which they are, but if you really want to prove it, that's the stage where you needed to take control of the game early. And specifically Carson Palmer, you need to prove that, you know, you're still a viable elite quarterback, because quite frankly, at this stage of the game, with the way he ended last season with the injury, was very unimpressive. So, you know, he got the extension. He's going to be there. He's not in danger of losing his job anytime super soon, but there's definitely reason for concern, and definitely reason to sit there and say, you know, is he good enough to lead them to a Super Bowl? I mean, it's not all into him. It's not, you know, not 100% about him, but it's heavily about him, because the rest of that team is so good and so talented that they can't afford bad games from him against elite opponents. We've clearly seen that.
Mm-hmm. So moving ahead to week two, what are some things you're most looking forward to? You know, which matchups, games, just anything you have your eye on for this weekend?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I'm starting my weekend looking at the early slate of games. You know, I want to look at the Bengals and Steelers. Yeah. I think these are two possible Super Bowl contenders. Wildly explosive offenses at times. A.J. Green had a great week one for the Bengals. Steelers, obviously, Antonio Brown, just a monster. Absolute monster. And so I want to see, you know, who gets the early edge in that division. NFC-wise, Cowboys and Redskins, I think, will be interesting. Two teams trying to bounce back. Also, the Chiefs and Texans, too. Those are two teams I think that could win their respective divisions. So, you know, definitely some big-time matchups on the early slate. That 12 p.m. time frame, you're looking at possible division winners facing off. 3 p.m., we're looking at Buccaneers and Cardinals. Buccaneers looked really good last week against the Falcons. We just touched on the Cardinals. The Cardinals need to bounce back and win. I think this one at home. And then I'll also be taking a look at Vikings and Packers, which is the Sunday night game. It sounds like we're going to be seeing Sam Bradford in this game. So if Sam Bradford is starting, it's not an easy task. But pressure's on. He's not going to do worse than Sean Hill. So I mean, that's the good news. At the very worst, he'll do the same. And at the very best, maybe he'll come out and surprise us a little bit. So those are the games I'm going to be watching. Just a really big week in the NFL, though. I mean, you can also talk about Colts, Broncos, a couple other matchups too that are, you know, these are going to matter come 12 weeks from now.
Yeah, and I'm with you on the Sunday night game. You know, an early battle. You know, the winner early inside track in the NFC North. You know, Saints Giants, maybe they have another shootout like they did last year. You know, maybe we'll see another 52-49 game. That'll be fun. And then tomorrow night, Jets Bills. I think I just saw somewhere the Jets aren't going to do their color rush uniforms, which in a way might be a good thing because when these teams met last year and they wore their uniforms, ugh. It was like watching a Christmas special. I mean, of course,
just touched on that. I mean, I'm not colorblind, but the folks that have that colorblindness said it was just a disaster to watch. Like, I can't even really imagine. I remember someone did, like, what it would look like if you are colorblind. And, like, I don't know how. I mean, I'm glad that they're not doing that again this year. I like the Color Rush uniforms. I'm actually pretty excited that they announced them. I love that they're bringing back the orange Dolphins uniforms. And some of those looked really sharp, but you can't wear both of those jerseys. I mean, I remember last year's game just looked awful. It's just not what we're used to. You know, we're used to seeing white uniforms and then color uniforms. So it's hard when you switch that up on us. We're creatures of habit. So that was very difficult. And I'm glad that they're not doing that this year.
The ketchup and mustard will always take the cake, though.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that was something else, man. That's something else. I think they're wearing them again this year, too, right? I know that the Jaguars, they're bringing back the same ones from last year.
Yeah.
And then I think the Rams are doing the same thing. I could be wrong on that, but I thought they had the mustard.
They might be, yeah. I know the Eagles will be rocking all black.
Yeah, I like that.
In week 16. Yeah.
I think that's sharp.
Patriots one looks pretty nice too for week 3 against the Texans. So yeah, we'll see. And I know they said, you know, some teams like the Lions, they'll have the color rush, but they're not going to wear them because they don't technically have a Thursday night game. So I think they should still let them wear them for the Thanksgiving game anyway. That'd be pretty fun. But that's down the line. So that's kind of a look at week 2 in the NFL. Let's go ahead and touch on college for a little bit, and then we'll wrap things up because, you know, definitely it was a fun week 2 in college football. You know, we didn't think there would be too many big games on paper, but we certainly got some exciting moments from week 2. I think the most exciting moment, and certainly the most controversial moment, was the end of the Central Michigan-Oklahoma State game, in which the referees mistakenly awarded Central Michigan a free play at the end of the game, and it wound up being a crazy Hail Mary to beat Oklahoma State. And the crazy thing is that there were MAC officials on the field that missed the call, and Big 12 officials on the replay that failed to stop the refs and prevent all this from happening. But, oh, by the way, Oklahoma State could have stopped Central Michigan on the field, and none of this would even be talked about right now.
That's true. That's true, but really unfortunate. I can't believe that they couldn't go back and just change it.
I mean, yeah, you could definitely do that too. Like, you know,
like the play wasn't supposed to happen. Yeah. Just rule it that. I mean, that's the rule. I mean, just say, you know, hey, this wasn't supposed to happen. So, guess what? We're making it so that it didn't happen. I don't understand that. I think that's a flaw in the system. But you know, like you said too, they didn't win the game on the field, whether the rule was blown or not. It wouldn't have been a problem at all had they just not allowed it. And so I was fortunate enough to be watching it live because I had the game on and I was waiting for the next game. And, you know, they were still stuck on that game. So I was like, okay, you know, whatever. And like, okay, cool, Hail Mary. And I see the throw. Obviously, it was like 10 yards short. And I see the other receiver coming up behind him. And as he, like, tips it to him, I'm like, oh, my goodness, he's about to do this. And he gets in there. Like, it's just that's why we love sports. That's why I love college football, because it's so unpredictable. There's so many games. And when there's so many games, all it takes is one or two of these moments per year to make us love the sport and remind us why we love it so much. So I'm happy for Central Michigan. Oklahoma State, you know, hey, it stinks, but you had your opportunity. And interested to go back. I'm going to be going back and watching that game, maybe even later tonight, to watch it for Mason Rudolph. Interested to see how he played. Cooper Rush, obviously, he's an NFL prospect as well, Central Michigan's quarterback. Haven't really taken a look at him as in depth, but I know Rudolph's a guy that's been getting buzzed. So that's a tough draw for them, though. But yeah, that was definitely the surprise, I think, of week two from my takeaways.
Mm-hmm. And then a couple top ranked teams kind of squeaking by their inferior opponents. You look at Georgia only beating Nichols by 2, and Clemson only beats Troy by 6. And Clemson actually was dropped from 2 to 5 in the AP poll. And Georgia, I believe, is also out of the top 10. You know, just some crazy events that happened in week two in what was supposed to be a kind of lackluster week. You know, no ranked teams going up against each other. You know, you look at Louisville, Action Jackson, you know, just going absolutely nuts as Louisville puts up 62 on Syracuse. You know, he's staking his early claim for the Heisman. You know, what, anything else catch your eye from last week in college?
No, not really too much. You know, I watched a couple games, but, you know, overall that was... Mentioned it last week, you know, if you owe any favors to anybody, do it that weekend. And, you know, I ended up watching a little bit more games. Now, I will say the Texas Tech and Arizona State game, which was the late game, Kalen Ballage scored 8 touchdowns, 7 on the ground. That was extremely fun to watch. Zero defense being played there. But outside of that, you know, I think you hit on the rest of the games. Just overall quiet week in college football. But, I mean, it's leading into a big week.
Yeah.
You know, starting to look at week three here, we've got 3 top 25 matchups. And it starts Thursday night, not with a top 25 matchup, but with a game I think that is worth watching. You start with number 6 ranked University of Houston against Cincinnati. I think that's going to be a tough game for U of H. I think U of H wins, of course, if Greg Ward is healthy. But that's going to be one to watch for sure. Nothing really Friday night, and then Saturday. We've got a number of games on Saturday, starting at 12 o'clock Eastern. You start with Florida State and Louisville. I mean, no disrespect to Penn State fans, Tennessee fans, Iowa fans, University of Miami, Clemson, also a top 25 team that's playing. Wisconsin, you know, they're also playing at that 12 o'clock time. But the game to watch is Florida State-Louisville. In Louisville... number 2 ranked Florida State, number 10 ranked Louisville. 2 very good quarterbacks are going to be in this game. 2 very good teams, but this is going to be about Francois, the Florida State quarterback, who's very talented, and one of my personal favorites, Lamar Jackson, the Louisville starting quarterback. This game, I think, could be one of the games of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. And then we'll kind of scroll through you. Alabama, top ranked. They're at Ole Miss, ranked number 19. That's at 3:30 CBS. Could Ole Miss play spoiler like they did a couple years ago at home against Bama? We'll see. And then the other top 25 game is 12th ranked Michigan State and 18th ranked Notre Dame at 7:30 on NBC. Notre Dame, real nice bounce back win, pulling away from Nevada. That game really wasn't even close.
There is one more game.
I almost forgot. And it's
the game
your
of the
Buckeyes.
Week. Yep.
Heading to Norman to take on the Sooners, number 3 versus number 14. And like I messaged you earlier tonight before we went on the air, Ohio State could basically end Oklahoma's playoff hopes. Who'd have thought that Oklahoma's playoff hopes could potentially be dead after week 3? But if Oklahoma loses this one, you might as well kiss them goodbye.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their playoff hopes are officially over. And really for Ohio State, if they lose this one as well, it's not officially over for them, but they're going to have to get some luck along the way if they lose this one to Oklahoma, just because Oklahoma suffered that early loss. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a tough one. I think Ohio State wins this game. They are favored on the road, which is pretty telling. Ohio State, to me, this team looks really, really good. This is one of the best Ohio State teams I've seen in recent years, including the championship team. So I'm really excited to see them on the road in a big stage. I'm excited to see Baker Mayfield. Obviously, they're two super talented running backs. I'm excited to see how Ohio State can handle them, if they can handle them. But I think this will be another phenomenal matchup. I'm going to take the Buckeyes in this one. You know, from the other top 25 games, I'm going to take Florida State. I'll take Notre Dame at home, and then I'll take Alabama, and then I'll also take Ohio State as well. So I'm not taking any underdogs. I think Notre Dame is the only higher-ranked team that I'm taking over Michigan State, but OSU on the road, I mean, that's going to be a tough challenge for them.
Absolutely, but, you know, I'll agree with you on those four. You know, Ohio State has just played very good so far this season. And yeah, this would definitely be a statement win for them to go to Oklahoma and get the win here. You know, and obviously definitely give them an inside track for one of those playoff spots. But yeah, you know, obviously some other interesting games. You know, like you mentioned Penn State hoping for revenge on Temple. Penn State definitely played a very good game against Pitt, but unfortunately that last play was a killer. You know, Trace McSorley throwing that interception, and you know, it's unfortunate too, because it was a play where, you know, they're in the middle of a drive where they pretty much have Pitt on their heels, and you know they did just such a real good job running the ball and, you know, not making too many mistakes, and then they go for the big gamble on either first or second. I think it was second down, but you know, go for the gamble, and it was a quick throw too. Like I had a buddy show me a video and had me rewatch the play and wanted me to point out the one receiver, which, yeah, the receiver on the far side of the field was wide open, but clearly McSorley didn't even look that way, because you could tell it was like a quick 3-step drop, and you know, he basically went for the gusto and unfortunately threw it into double coverage, and it was a poor throw to begin with, and that pretty much killed Penn State's hopes right then and there. And, you know, yeah, I was quick to blame James Franklin for the play call, and he still is kind of to blame. You know, he's not exactly helping this program 100%. He's doing what he can, but, you know, he's definitely had his issues. But, yeah, also a poor decision by McSorley. But, I mean, he's young. he'll bounce back, but you know, unfortunate loss for Pitt or for Penn State. So you know, hopefully next year they get some revenge when they meet at Happy Valley. But this week they've got Temple, and also the Iowa game too. You know, that'll be quite interesting against North Dakota State. You know, North Dakota State lately has had a history of stunning these 1A schools. This would definitely be a huge win for the Bison if they can go to Iowa and get this win. So, you know, definitely some, I mean, like you said, Florida State-Louisville, the game to watch, but if you have like a second TV or watching on your computer or something like that, there's definitely some options in an early wave and certainly throughout the day as well.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm super excited to see a full slate of games again. You know, this is the last week was the last week slate, so last full Saturday of generally weak matchups. You know, at least on paper, until middle of October. Once we hit middle of October, there's a week or two there where it's like, okay. As some of the divisional matchups and conference matchups aren't that strong. But I mean, we're in the thick of it. You know, the college football season really, really starts this week for most teams as they're starting to hit tougher opponents. The cupcakes are mostly off the schedules for the foreseeable future. And this is where it really becomes even more fun as we start to see powerhouses. This is a good time to start scouting if you're looking at that. You know, you've got a couple games now under your feet, and it's time to set that baseline expectation for the rest of the season as far as, you know, what you want to see improved and what you need to see improved and what you will eventually see at the end of the season, you know, have they progressed in any form. So it's a big week for teams, big week for NFL teams as well, watching these college players.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's never too early to start thinking NFL draft. I'm sure we'll have some draft notes soon and get some of these draft picks in here down the line and start prepping for April, even though it's only September.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being focused on the draft already. You know, it's going to come either way. So, you know, just being prepared for it, there's nothing wrong with that.
We'll be here before we know it. Yeah, I think that's good place to wrap it up there. You know, as always, I think we hit on some good stuff. You know, a lot of good talk there, a lot of good banter as always, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's, you know, football is just fantastic because it writes the storylines for us. We don't have to really stretch far to find what's really juicy out there. We just watch the games and we let people know what we see. And for the love of goodness, my Eagles fans, please stop filling my mentions. I don't hate Carson Wentz just because I wasn't a fan of him out of college. It does not mean I have a bias against him. I hope he does great things. I have nothing against him. I'm just not ready to call him Joe Montana yet. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's all that is. So, but hey, it's all in good fun. It's football, and you know, let's have fun with it.
And unfortunately, he's not exactly facing another strong team next week either. But, you know, it is what it is. Like you said earlier, you play the teams on your schedule. He just happens to have Chicago this week. But week three is when things should get interesting when he gets Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and even this week might be interesting too, just because not necessarily the talent that Chicago has, but they do have Vic Fangio, who is a tremendous defensive coordinator. I think he's light years better than Horton. I don't think Horton's a good defensive coordinator. I know he's got a good reputation amongst fans and the NFL, but you look at his track record, he really hasn't done too much in the NFL in the last 5 to 10 years. So I think this might be a little bit of a tougher matchup for him just because Fangio has a great, great track record going back to the 49ers and even far before that.
And it is on the road. You know, Soldier Field isn't the easiest place to play, so
yep.
Should be fun to watch on Monday night. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up here. As always, thanks so much, guys, for listening. We really do appreciate it. Enjoy the games this weekend, of course. And we'll be back to talk about them next week, as always. Remember to hit up Ian on Twitter at NFL Film Study. Hit me up at Bill_Rossetti. And, of course, you know, the pod at GridGrads Pod. So be on the lookout. And again, thanks so much. We'll see you guys next week right here on GG. Take care, my friends.